So, as Danae said, we did a lot of traveling over the holiday. We were with my family in Kansas and with her family in Arizona. But one of the things that I remember back from being with my family in Indiana around this time is a kind of, you know, we come to the end of the holiday season and there's this space where we're starting to slug through the beginning of the new year, right? By this time, usually school is either has started or is about to start, and people are like, ah, Christmas break was so good, why? And then in some places, like in northern Indiana, there's a day where all the shops are closed and like a lot of the Amish people don't go to work. And does anybody know what happens on January 6th? Epiphany. Okay, so January 6th is Epiphany. It was yesterday, fun fact. And Epiphany is also known as, anybody know? Three Kings Day. So Three Kings Day is Women's Christmas. I didn't know that. Let it be known on the recording that it is also known as Women's Christmas, and I promise to look into that after we get done tonight, because I should have been more prepared. So I'm going to talk about Three Kings Day. I'm sorry. I'm going to talk about Three Kings Day, and there's a couple of really neat things. This is one of those sermons that as I was preparing for it, every time, sometimes when you're preparing to talk, like as you research more and read more and prepare more, you're like, ooh, I want to talk about this and this and this and this. So forgive me if I'm a little scatterbrained, but we're going to talk a lot about the Three Kings as closely related to as we can with our theme for Advent, which is recounting the cost. So to jump in, we want to start with why are these people here? So the Three Kings are a part of pretty much every nativity scene. Danae, my wonderful wife, likes to collect these. She has a number of different nativity scenes from a number of different cultures around our house. My mom also has a lot of these. Grandparents, many of you might be familiar with this scene. One thing you can note, if there's ever a pig in one, it's not real. But they always have, what? It's true. They also always have these, the wise men, Mary and Joseph, the shepherds, and funny enough, are the wise men in the story? No, they're not. Who knows where the passage of the wise men comes? Later. It comes later. It comes, thanks. it comes actually in Matthew chapter 2 is the only place in the Gospels where the wise men are mentioned. The most famous reading of the Christmas story, the place where we reference it often, as we have in the past number of sermons, for Advent has been the Gospel of Luke. This story is only found in Matthew, and these people do not belong in the Nativity, but that's not what I'm here for. So let's read a little bit about the Three Kings, because they're an important part of the story, but we need to know why. So let's read through. Chapter 2, verse 1 of Matthew, In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, asking, "Where is the child who has been born King of the Jews? For we observed the star at its rising and have come to pay him homage." When King Herod heard this, he was frightened, and all of Jerusalem with him. And calling together all of the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea. For so it has been written by the prophet, 'And you in Bethlehem in the land of Judah are by no means the last among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel.' Then Herod secretly called for the wise men and learned from them the exact time when the star had appeared. Then he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, 'Go and search diligently for the child. And when you have found him, bring me word so that I may also go and pay him homage.'" He's a sneaky little devil. "When they heard the king, they set out, and there, ahead of them, went the star that they had seen at its rising, until it stopped over the place where the child was. And when they saw that star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy. On entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they knelt down and paid him homage. Then, opening their treasure chests, they offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they left for their own country by another road. So, what do we know from this reading? These are a few things that I pulled out. So, Jesus was born. So, after Jesus was born, so this is, again, thanks, John, after, sometime later, these are wise men from the east. Notice, wise men, they are not necessarily kings. We often talk about this as King's Day, Three Kings Day. That reference comes from the Old Testament, where it was prophesied that the kings will bow down. Okay? This is not to say they weren't kings. This is just to say they're not necessarily kings. Okay? So they're wise men from the east. East being pretty relative. East, as you'll see in a map that I have in a little bit, is pretty much, there's a lot there, okay? So we know kind of about where they're from. We know that they're paying him homage, they're giving him a blessing and honor, they're observing the star, and he inquired, and when Herod was asking about them, he inquired where. Now this is something that I just thought was really interesting. He doesn't say, no, this can't be, or are you crazy or off your rocker? He's like, oh man, where is he, right? So there's something to this. I also want to point out, too, on entering the house, not the stable, and they are bringing him gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Gold, frankincense, and myrrh in and of themselves has some pretty important significance, and we'll touch on that in a second. So we have the three kings. What do we know? Well, we know that they're not explicitly three, okay? We also know that they're not explicitly kings. And I think just, well, you can decide what to do with your nativity, Dave. But I also think we know that they came from, so we know that they came from somewhere. They came from, what?
The east.
The east, right? But they came from somewhere, which actually, when they came from the east, the translation is like, they came from the rising sun, which is really neat, right? So they came from the direction that the sun comes. So in Western Christianity, do any of you know, like, I wasn't taught the names of the wise men. Did any of you know, like, were you taught the names of the wise men? Can, for bonus points? Balthazar was one of them? It's not Shadrach and Abednego. That's a different one. But Balthazar is one of them. Balthazar is known as the scholar or king from Arabia. We also had Caspar, who's an Indian representative, an Indian king, and Melchior, who is Persian. These are referred to indiscriminately as kings or scholars, and sometimes they talk about being all from one of these places or wherever. It just depends on what tradition you come from, because, again, this is not recorded in Scripture. This is really tradition and kind of folklore. That's not folklore, but it's... Yeah, I'm not going to go there. In Syrian Christianity, they're Larvandad, Guspana, and Haromsidas. They're all Persian names that I probably brutally murdered. Eastern church traditions across Ethiopia, Armenia, and China all have their own names and traditions, and all claim that one or multiples of the kings came from there. So we have all of this stuff, but really, Matthew says that they came from the east, which is rising out of the sun, which in that time, I think the next one is a map here, is anything pretty much east of Jerusalem. So it could have been, I drew lines just because I thought that's, we can call that east of there. Anything else is north or south. So Matthew says anything east of the sun, which in that time, everything east of Judea and Syria was part of the Parthian Empire. Does anybody know what the dominant religion in that empire was? Zoroastrianism. And Zoroastrianism places high value on the study of the stars. It's a monotheistic religion, but they study the stars, and so the Magi, which can be translated in Greek as, anybody want to guess? King, smart people, or astronomer. And they, these people were coming, following the stars, following the signs, to honor a significant figure that they thought, yeah. So, anyways, the other thing that we know is that they don't belong in the Nativity. Okay? So, sorry, Dave. If we know all these things, and if we know that they're not kings, they're not necessarily three of them, you know, they could have been five, it could have been a whole group of people. You know, if they don't belong in the story, if they're a little bit later on the Epiphany, then what's left? Why is this significant? Why are they even a part of the narrative? I think, and really this is the whole purpose of Epiphany, that the Magi represent the manifestation of Christ to the Gentiles. Christ, his life, his teaching, his death, and his resurrection. And this is really significant because it means that from Christ's birth, Christ's life and teaching was meant not just for the chosen people, but for all people, for the Gentiles and for everyone, which is a very significant thing, at least for me and my faith. So the Advent series that we've been going through for the Christmas story is to see not just how we are invited in the kingdom, but how to recognize that there is also a cost in obedience to this invitation. In week one, Zechariah and Elizabeth was the topic, and Bonnie talked about how faithfulness in the midst of doubt and frustration can be taken from their story. In week two, Terry shared about Mary and how, for all intents and purposes, she was the most unlikely candidate to be the God-bearer, and therefore we are not disqualified either. In week three, Josias, on Chris's behalf, shared about the very real costs that Joseph faced, but that his story is a reminder that no matter what the cost, the kingdom is worth it. On week four, on Christmas, even Christmas Eve, Josiah shared about the costly incarnation of Jesus coming as a human baby. He was born a king, but not with the pomp and the circumstance, not with the power. He was born experiencing humanness and loss. And then last week, Terry talked about Anna and Simeon and the spiritual discipline of maintaining hope in the face of hopelessness. So, if we've established that we have a bunch of privileged representatives from somewhere coming, and they're privileged both in wealth and knowledge, they're traveled from somewhere in the direction of the rising sun, they came a long way to meet Jesus sometime, likely within 2 years, of his birth, to shower him with gifts that acknowledge his earthly kingship, gold, his priesthood, frankincense, and foreshadowing his death, myrrh. All three things, not only significant, but very costly. It'd be really wonderful to stop here, but we probably won't. Because I think that we need to talk about the cost of the Magi. It's hard to imagine for me, as I was thinking about this, the teaching team, we came up with a list, well, I was gone that day. They came up with a list, and then we talked about it, of things that we thought that the Magi would have given up. What were the costs that they incurred? And it's really hard to think, you know, these are some privileged, you know, likely mostly males, and they came a long way and gave some expensive gifts that they, you know, might have been a cost to them. But what were the real costs that they were giving? So they left everything for the journey. And everything means it was costly, right? They probably came, it was a long way, so they probably brought their whole encampments with them. And so it was a very costly decision to come. It was to an unknown destination. They were following a star. Imagine that. And they probably went through dangerous terrain, probably were at risk of enemies or whatnot. There was also a social cost. They were a part of a new they were coming into a new culture. They were interacting with people from a new religion, and they were leaving their positions of power, which could have been a bigger deal than we would ever know. they also had to defy a ruler. And this is the interesting part, because we get it, like, Herod's a bad dude. But if you think about them being in the social stratification that they were in, when you come from one culture to another, especially as royalty, who do you usually meet with when you get to the new culture? You usually meet with the king. And so they're coming to meet with Herod, and then when they go on and they meet with Jesus, not only have they come down and offered their best gifts to him, but then they go by another route and avoid Herod, going against his wishes. They defied the social stratification that was there for them. And we have no idea of knowing what the costs of that were. It would have been very countercultural, if nothing else. What else do you notice when you hear the story or think about the story of the Magi? When you think about all the things that they left behind or whatever, what are some other things that you think they might have left? Family? Yeah? Employment? Yep. Were their source of income? Maybe they were businesses that they had to leave in the hands of other people. That's trust. Maybe there were farms, lands, livestock. So the cost of the Magi is real. It's something that we have to talk about, and we'll talk a little bit later about what it means for us. But I also think that it's worth mentioning that there was a very real felt cost to the families with babies born in and around Bethlehem at this time. And directly because of the Magi's presence and the Magi's conversation with Herod, there were a lot of grieving families a couple years after Jesus was born. I don't know what to do with that. It also sent Mary, Joseph, and Jesus fleeing to Egypt. They became refugees. They would have been seeking asylum somewhere because they were fleeing the wrath of Herod. So I don't know if any of you are aware of the 90%, 10% rule. Anybody? Oh, you are? I made it up. So, huh? Not the hitch rule. But the 90%, 10, the lean in thing. I was going a different route, Colin. but that's hilarious. No, the 90%, 10% rule that I was thinking of is that I really think that the next 10%, so if you have been tuning out or whatever, Mark, have been tuning out of the service, you know, or whatnot, just tune in, for the next little bit, for the last 10%. Because the first 90% were important, to bring us up to what this last bit is. And I think that now it's time to talk about the cost of discipleship. This is the part that, even though it wasn't as fun for me to think about, has been something that I've wrestled with over the last couple weeks. So, and I'm going to read most of it so I don't mess it up. We may not be social or political elites, and I know that I'm speaking for myself because you might be. But the costs of the Magi were nearly all, or for the most part, related to their privilege. I didn't have time to go back and listen to Terry's message on Mary in week 2, but I know that she alluded to a similar concept then. And that is, in these biblical stories, in the ones we're reading, in the ones we talk about throughout the year, we as a community of predominantly middle-class America, we relate a lot closer to those in the positions of power and privilege than to those in the bottom of society. So as we think back over the Christmas story, I hope you remember to have the faithfulness in the midst of doubt and frustration. I hope that you have assurance that you were qualified to bear Christ to the world. The encouragement that no matter what the very real costs you face, the kingdom is worth it. The humility, as exemplified by Christ's costly incarnation, and hope in the face of hopelessness. But most of all, after tonight, I encourage you to tirelessly work to recognize your power and privilege. Recognize that you might have, and that you might have the wisdom to know how to harness it to lift up the lowly, how to navigate the social stratification that might not seem normal. What are the costs of our comfort? What are the costs of our relative wealth? What's the cost of our social status? In the case of the Magi, where might you be called to go? Or in the case of someone like Mary, what might you be called to do in order to lift up an unlikely candidate? When I think about this story, the thing that I most want to present to us as a question is, how can we seek to lift up the others around us? Not only are we called to all these things, that we're given the gift of faithfulness, assurance of our qualification, encouragement that the kingdom is worth it, humility and hope, how can we be called to go out of our way to take on the cost of making sure that those things are also relevant and available to the people around us? I think this is the perfect way to end our Advent series. And as you think about, in this time of reflection that we're about to go into, as you think about how you might fit into the story, I don't want you to think about just the ways that you have to all the time give up of yourself, because we need to be poured into as well. But seriously put thought, whether now or later, and so what are the ways that you can use the power and privilege that you have, that you can use the resources, the hope, the faithfulness, all the gifts that you've been given in order to, as we, to reference all the way back to Genesis 12 in the original blessing, how can you take that blessing and be a blessing into the world? Because no matter what the cost, I think that that's the calling that we're called to make.